Hello and welcome to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds. My name is John Coe. I am in Flagstaff, and I will be your volunteer reader for today, reading articles that were published in the Arizona Capital Times on or about August 1st, 2025. Headline: Arizona officials shift focus to secure state's share of Colorado River. Written by Reagan Priest and published in the Arizona Capital Times on July 30th, 2025. Arizona officials are celebrating the passage of new groundwater legislation, but setting their sights on getting Colorado River negotiations across the finish line in 2026. At a bill signing for Senator T.J. Schaap's Ag to Urban legislation, Governor Katie Hobbs, state lawmakers, local officials, and farmers said the bill was a step in the right direction for water conservation. But almost all of those officials also acknowledged that it is only one piece of the puzzle. The legislation allows housing developers operating under water restrictions to purchase the water rights of farmers heading into retirement. The governor anticipates that it will result in the construction of tens of thousands of homes and the conservation of 10 million acre-feet of water, yet that alone may not be enough. Quote, ensuring that Arizona gets our fair share of Colorado River water is critical, Hobbs told reporters after the signing. It's maybe the most critical issue in front of us in terms of water management. Schaap, a Republican, said during the bill signing that he is already looking upward and onward to the Colorado River. Quote, we have a tough road ahead of us with Colorado River negotiations, Schaap said. Arizona must have a united front as we approach the Colorado River. Arizona's share of the Colorado River water, which is split between seven western states, remains undecided as the states renegotiate their agreement to divvy up the water. Negotiations have been tense due to disagreements over which states should bear the brunt of usage cuts, but an agreement could be on the horizon. The lower basin states, Arizona, California, and Nevada, put a new proposal on the table in June, which seems more agreeable to the upper basin states, Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming. The new proposal would use a formula to determine how much water each state gets based on actual water flows from the river in preceding years. A new agreement to replace the original Colorado River Compact must be in place by October 2026, and the federal government is warning that if a draft agreement isn't on the table by November 11th, federal officials will intervene. The agreement must go through environmental review and be approved by Congress in order for it to take effect. Arizona will face a unique hurdle in the process of adopting this new compact: legislative approval. Schaap said Arizona is the only Colorado River state which requires its legislature to approve any agreement that the governor enters into. Quote, it's something that I'm ready to dive into head first, Schaap told the Arizona Capital Times. Getting a majority of Arizona's 90 lawmakers to agree to support a new Colorado River compact could be tough. Groundwater has been a particularly sensitive issue in the legislature, with Republican Representative Gail Griffin largely seen as the arbiter of water legislation in rural communities. Griffin has long opposed any groundwater management proposals that restrict farmers or take away local control from rural cities and counties. Arizona could face drastic cuts to its Colorado River water supply under various proposed agreements, which would be a hard sell for Griffin and other rural lawmakers. The Republican-controlled legislature may also be reluctant to give Hobbs any wins before her re-election campaign in 2026. Additionally, many lawmakers are unhappy with the Department of Water Resources and its director, Tom Buschotsky, who is representing the state in Colorado River negotiations over their handling of groundwater management in the state. Ultimately, lawmakers still have time to create a game plan for legislative approval of any Colorado River water deal, Schaap said. He said those conversations are beginning to take shape, and he hopes recent compromises, like the ag-to-urban bill, will help build momentum for future bipartisanship on water issues. Quote, as long as I'm around, we're going to try to find that consensus to make sure that we're all speaking with one united voice so that Arizona is in the prime position to continue to be able to grow, Schaap said. And all of those conversations rely on the Colorado River states coming to an agreement, which is still tenuous. If the federal government intervenes as promised, it could prompt lawsuits, for which Hobbs noted the state is fully prepared. Quote, it is critical that Arizona is not taking the brunt of federal cuts that will result if we don't get a fair deal, Hobbs told reporters. I was able to secure $3 million in the state budget that ensures that we're ready to fight for our share if we have to, but I'm hopeful that we can come to some resolution. Headline: The Long Road to Election Integrity. Written by Kira Riley and published in the Arizona Capital Times on August 2nd, 2025. Election trust remains a moving target despite a less explosive aftermath in 2024, leaving election officials and outside parties on an eternal path to disseminate voter information and dispel misinformation. In contrast to 2020 and 2022, the 2024 election left few claims of fraud and no election challenges in its wake. But more than a year out from another major election, those working in and watching the electoral system do not believe more latent voter distrust means it disappeared entirely. As a part of ongoing education efforts, RightCount, a nonprofit aimed at educating and ensuring voters of the electoral system's integrity, sent its board members, including former Governor and Secretary of State Jan Brewer, former Maricopa County Recorder Helen Purcell, and former Congressman Matt Salmon, to tour the Maricopa County Tabulation and Election Center on July 29th, led by Election Director Scott Jarrett. Jarrett ran through the fast facts as part of Tour Tuesdays, a weekly offering by the county to show any interested parties the inner workings of elections up close and personal. He reminded members of RightCount, the former elections officials themselves, of Maricopa County's position as the third most populous voting district, centrally located in a swing state and intersecting 8 of the 9 congressional districts and 22 of the 30 legislative districts. Jarrett ran through the mechanics of creating, printing, sending out, and tabulating ballots on election day and beyond in continuously high turnout elections, with rates hovering at about 80% in 2020 and 2024. And Jarrett also acknowledged the stopgaps, the fail-safes, the steps taken by the office to shield election data from tampering, to ensure all ballots are counted, and to assure voters of a solid outcome. Though more than a year out from the 2026 general election and coasting in the wake of a far less contentious 2024 election, Jarrett says he expected continued challenges to the public trust to continue. Quote, I'd say right now we're not hearing at the same level the distrust in elections. I'd say a large part of that is probably due to the results of the last election, Jarrett said. I think we're going to continue to have issues. I think this is going to be on all sides of the election with distrust if they don't like the outcomes. And in some ways, distrust is already popping up. Carrie Lake, former gubernatorial and Senate candidate, who kept steadfast in her claims of a stolen or sabotaged election after her failed run for governor, continues to use her platforms to call for investigations into election fraud, prosecutions for alleged past crimes. She recirculated a video from 2022 of the Maricopa County Tabulation Center claiming election workers of, quote, illegally breaking into sealed election machines and reprogramming them. Mark Fincham, an acolyte of the same election skepticism, posted on X that he was, quote, right about the stolen election, and linked to an article in which Donald Trump called for another look at the 2020 election via a special prosecutor. Jarrett noted the county's ongoing effort to keep correct information at the forefront. Quote, and as much as we offer these tours and publicize these tours and inform voters of our website, we just don't compete with the platform that others may have distrust or a reason for why they want to institute distrust in elections, Jarrett said. Right Count has an eye on the same goal of voter education. Brewer said the last time she had been to the tabulation center was during her tenure on the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors. She recalled her time overseeing state elections, too, as the Secretary of State. Quote, I am just impressed with the staff, the equipment, and the leadership here, Brewer said. I have no doubt that our elections are honest and they turn out the right data. As far as the current temperature on voter trust and future work to extend her own sentiment, Brewer said she believed there will always be doubters. Quote, they don't understand the elections, and they might repeat something that somebody else has said to them, Brewer said. Unfortunately, I think a lot of this rhetoric sometimes is for people to be able to go out there and get a reaction from the public as they campaign. They want that reaction. They've got to talk about it so that they get fired up rather than going out there and saying how wonderful it is. As for Right Count, Brewer said she planned to continue to work with her fellow board members to, quote, explain to people what we have known and learned about elections in our time. Quote, it works, Brewer said, checking our democracy. As a prior candidate and the candidates today, they want to be sure that it works, so they should begin every day learning more and more about it. Headline. Fire districts face funding crisis, lawmakers seek solutions. Written by Jacob Thorington and published in the Arizona Capital Times on August 1st, 2025. Firefighters told lawmakers this week that fire districts are on the brink of collapse without an alternative funding source. Now, lawmakers are coming to try to gauge the state's preparedness for wildfire events with a Fire Preparedness Committee House Ad Hoc Committee. Arizonans utilize more than 130 fire districts across the state to provide fire protection to residents within each taxing district, but their primary funding source, property taxes, has shifted to the point where officials no longer believe they can sustainably provide the critical emergency response services to rural areas. On July 29th, Dan Freeberg, president of the Professional Firefighters of Arizona, told the committee that firefighters are also leaving underfunded fire districts for municipal-level jobs. Quote, they can read the handwriting on the wall. It is unsustainable, Freeberg said. Voters passed Proposition 117 in 2012, which sets a cap on annual property tax increases to 5%, Freeberg said, that since that change, fire districts have not been able to keep up with inflation, and they are about 10 years behind in funding. The current price of a modern fire engine now exceeds $1 million. The legislature attempted to address the issue with Proposition 310 in 2022, which narrowly failed after 51% of voters opposed the measure. Proposition 310 would have created a tenth of a cent sales tax for fire districts, allowing people in urban areas that have city fire services to subsidize fire districts. Since the failure of Prop 310, Freeberg told the Arizona Capital Times that he's had little success in advocating for funding, and he fears firefighters are being pushed too thin. Quote, people die from this. That's just the objective reality, Freeberg said. The state budget allocated funds for fire protection. All firefighters employed by the Department of Forestry and Fire Management received a 15% pay raise. The budget also allocates $30 million to the Wildland Fire Suppression Fund to try to proactively prevent forest fires. An additional $11 million was secured to help cover costs for communities affected by wildfires, and $2 million will be allocated for fire incident management grants. Some lawmakers, like Representative Walt Blackmun, a Republican from Snowflake, introduced bills to deal with the lack of funding, but those bills were not included in the final budget. Quote, "The problem is that we have other members that didn't see it that way," Blackmun said. Gary Morris, a former fire chief of the Pine Strawberry Fire District and a member of the ad hoc committee, said most of the burden for fire districts comes from the medical services that these districts provide. He said it's time for state lawmakers to reconsider how fire districts are funded. The state might also eliminate the need for fire districts to provide emergency medical services, freeing up staffing and resources for firefighting. Arizona Tax Research Association President Kevin McCarthy said that EMS is often conflated with fire protection, and large wildfire events typically need more than just one fire district responding to them. Quote, "It seems to me that the response to that can't be one small fire district at a time," McCarthy said. Private ambulance companies can offer EMS services in rural areas, but they also usually bill more than the municipalities do. In a 2023 meeting about Santan Valley's fire coverage, Representative Neil Carter, a Republican from Santan Valley, shared a story from one of his constituents who drove to the closest fire district in Queen Creek while she was having a heart attack. She didn't subscribe to Rural Metro, a private fire and EMS company in the area, and didn't want to pay a higher bill. Some fear the damage caused by a catastrophic fire in an underfunded district could compare to the January wildfires in Southern California. During the July 29th House Ad Hoc Committee meeting, Timber Mesa Fire Chief Randy Chevalier said the greatest threat to communities like Payson, Sholo, and other rural areas of the state is a structure fire that cannot be contained. Timber Mesa has more than 200 square miles of wild land its firefighters protect and more than 400 square miles of coverage for medical services. Chevalier said response times can climb upwards of 30 minutes for his firefighters. Blackmun is also calling on the state to rely less on out-of-state fire protection, which he said can cost up to 40% more than in additional costs to respond to wildfire events. In a news release before the ad hoc meeting, Blackmun said he wanted to see the state turn to in-state contractors rather than rely on aid from neighboring states where one fire engine can cost an additional $1,400. Quote, "We should be using every trained and equipped engine in the state, but instead we're bypassing local crews and importing more expensive resources from out of state," Blackmun said. You're listening to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been providing information access since 1979, and you can always listen to our live stream at sunsounds.org. Headline: No Labels Party Transforms to Support Independent Candidates in State Elections. Written by Kira Riley. Published in the Arizona Capital Times on August 1st, 2025. Organizers behind last year's open primary initiative have commandeered the state's near-defunct No Labels Party to pave a smoother path for independent candidates in state elections. The benefits of running with an established state political party include a lower signature threshold to qualify as a candidate, as well as the infrastructure and endorsement necessary to organize a political campaign, benefits not normally accessible to purely independent candidates. No Labels, now with a new state party chair, will not be called No Labels for much longer. And though the party maintains some foundation with the national committee, they have, quote, complete autonomy in reimagining their bylaws and approach regarding unaffiliated candidates. Quote, "In the end, what are we trying to promote?" asked the new No Labels State Party chair, Paul Johnson, who is the former mayor of Phoenix. "We believe that an open primary and more people participating is to our advantage, and we're going to look for candidates and for people who believe that, who believe civility matters, decency matters, and focusing on the big issues also matters." No Labels sought and secured party status in Arizona in March 2023. The national outfit sought to only run a third-party presidential candidate, so when some statements of interest for statewide and legislative offices came in under the No Labels banner, the party, under former leadership, sued the Secretary of State to keep them off the ballot. The district court originally agreed that having the party associate with unwanted candidates burdened its rights, but in a stunning reversal that paved the way for the party's latest transformation, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals overturned that decision, finding the participation by party members in the democratic process outweighed any alleged injury to the No Labels party itself. The party was then on the run to dissolution, but Johnson, key organizer behind the Make Elections Fair initiative, or Prop 140, said he struck a deal with the national party to take over as state chair and use the shell of the state party, now about 39,804 voters strong, to create new access opportunities for independent candidates. Quote, "We're going to make certain that at least independents and unaffiliated voters are included in that process," Johnson said. Under state law, independent candidates or those running without a recognized political party are tasked with gathering 3% of the total registered voters who are not members of a political party. In contrast, those affiliated with political parties have to seek out a fourth or a half of a percent of the total qualified signers in the state. In 2024, to qualify as an independent candidate, a person would have needed to collect 42,303 signatures. To be eligible under the No Labels banner, a candidate would need only 1,288 signatures. Quote, "It's been almost impossible in the past, and we're going to make it easy," Johnson said. As the new state party takes shape, some candidates have already signaled their intent to run under the No Labels banner. One will appear on a general election ballot for the first time after Richard Grayson, a write-in candidate, received the single vote necessary to clear the primary in the 7th Congressional District. Grayson does not seek office in earnest. His hobby for more than four decades has been seeking election not to win, and in the process, he highlights loopholes in state election laws. As for No Labels, Grayson paints the move as more of a revenge on the party that battled in court to prevent any candidate, aside from a hand-picked presidential contender, from running under the party's banner. A former Republican candidate for State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Stephen Neal, switched his statement of interest to No Labels days ago to appeal to voters of various bipartisan backgrounds. Quote, "I felt that it shared the value of bringing people together," Neal said. Beyond Neal, Tyson Draper, a TikToker and fan of President Donald Trump, and Carrie Lake filed to run for governor under the No Labels banner as well. Johnson said the first order of business is changing the name of the party, then to alter the bylaws, convene a nominating committee, and start fielding independent candidates for offices up and down the ballot, with the potential to raise money down the line. He clarified that any candidate could run for any office under the party banner, but they plan to support select candidates through the nominating committee process. They are now looking for opportunities in the 2026 and 2028 elections. Quote, "Today there is really no structure for this party, so we have to create one," Johnson said. "We know that what our North Star is, but there'll be a mess in the process. That's unimportant. What is important is that we change the system, and we begin to open it up to people who have differing ideas about how to solve these big problems that we have." Headline: Revived bill aims to restrict public funding for abortion services in Arizona. Written by Jamar Younger and published in the Arizona Capital Times on August 1st, 2025. A Republican lawmaker wants to revive a bill that would prohibit the state from providing public funding to facilities and clinics that perform or promote abortions. Representative Lupe Diaz, a Republican from Benson, said he plans to reintroduce his measure to prevent the state from entering into a contract or providing grants to any person or facility that provides or advises clients to seek an abortion in Arizona. Under current law, Arizona doesn't allow public funding for most abortions except in the case of emergencies. But Diaz's proposal would expand upon that provision. Quote, "For me and all of the Republican caucus is that it is an individual, and that individual deserves the same rights as any citizen under the Constitution, which means the protection of life," said Diaz, who serves as the pastor of a non-denominational church in Benson. Quote, "Once you begin to violate or to cross that line, then yeah, I'm going to restrict every dollar that I can from going to promote, perform, and provide an abortion." Diaz's original bill, House Bill 2547, passed the House along party lines before moving to the Senate, where it was approved in the Senate Government Committee. The measure then stalled before being approved by the chamber. Supporters of the bill acknowledged that voters approved Proposition 139 last fall, which enshrines the right to an abortion in the state constitution. However, they opposed the idea of taxpayer money funding facilities that advertise the procedure as a viable option for unwanted pregnancies. Quote, "The crux of this whole issue is whether the taxpayer should be paying for that promotion," said United States Representative Andy Biggs, a Republican from Arizona, at the Senate Government Committee hearing on March 19th. "So if you're defining promotion as someone going in and being referred to a specific specialist for medical care, in that instance, there is no rationale that says the public should have to be paying for that." The legislation drew strong opposition from medical professionals and abortion rights groups that criticized the bill for attempting to circumvent the new constitutional right to abortion. According to those groups, the bill would limit access to health care options, affect low-income people who rely on publicly funded clinics for reproductive health care, and lead to the closure of facilities that provide abortions and other health care. Quote, "Arizonans spoke loud and clear last election that they overwhelmingly approved Proposition 139. Yet extremists in the state legislature continually target and stigmatize healthcare professionals and health centers at the expense of the health and well-being of Arizona's already vulnerable communities," said Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona interim president and CEO April Donovan in a statement. Quote, "We made clear this legislative session that HB 2547 is unpopular among voters and completely misleading. The bill was stalled and should not be revived." Diaz disagreed with this idea that the legislation would restrict health care services. Quote, "There's still going to be services provided, and for the low income, there's going to be plenty of medical availability for them," he said. "They just can't perform abortions or promote them." Diaz originally said on X on June 26th that he was going to bring back the bill after the United States Supreme Court ruled in Medina v. Planned Parenthood South Atlantic case that a private citizen couldn't sue South Carolina for excluding Planned Parenthood from receiving state Medicaid funding. Although the ruling allows South Carolina to move forward with its plan, it still doesn't address the legality of removing government funding from clinics that perform abortions, said James G. Hodge, Jr., and Peter Kiewit Foundation Professor of Law and Director of the Center for Public Health Law and Policy at Arizona State University's Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. Quote, "They did not make any statement about whether South Carolina's maneuver here was actually legally sound," Hodge said. "We still don't know exactly whether or not that will fly with the United States Supreme Court. They have not clarified that. My best guess is they will probably allow it." Arizona is one of 38 states with laws that restrict the use of public resources for abortions to varying degrees, according to data compiled by the Temple University Center for Public Health Law Research. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you for listening.